Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about a specific experience in their life. It lets us step into their shoes so that we can learn how to better love our brothers, sisters, family members, and neighbors. This episode is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publishers of Held by Abby Wedgeworth. With 31 biblical reflections on God's comfort and care in the sorrow of miscarriage, Abby uses Psalm 139 to walk alongside women suffering the heartbreak of miscarriage. Having experienced miscarriage herself, she uses these precious verses to show women that God can bring comfort, assurance, protection, and purpose in the very sadness that they are experiencing. Pick up a copy of Held at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. Support for By Faith is provided by B&H Publishers, publisher of The Courage to Stand by Russell Moore. Friends, we live in a fearful and cowardly time. We know Bible verses like, "Do not be afraid," yet so many of us feel anxious and withdrawn, seeking to escape the notice of whatever scares us. The crisis we face is not a crisis of clarity, but a crisis of courage. And yet Jesus told us that we are to stand with courage. In his new book, The Courage to Stand, best-selling and award-winning author Russell Moore calls us to a Christ-empowered courage by pointing the way to real freedom from fear, the way of the cross. That way means integrity through brokenness, community through loneliness, power through weakness, and a future through irrelevance. Pick up your copy of this important book, Courage to Stand, by Russell Moore, wherever books are sold. Today, my guest on By Faith is Laura Wiffler. You may know Laura from her ministry through Risen Motherhood. Laura and her sister-in-law, Emily, started the Risen Motherhood podcast, and they've continued to expand their ministry to include a book, online resources, and tons more. If you're a mom, you'll definitely want to check it out. Laura joins me today to talk about the joys and challenges that she faces as a mother to a little girl with special needs. We talk about her daughter's diagnosis, how her diagnosis has impacted the whole family, and specifically Laura as her mom, and what Laura would want us to know about how to love our friends who are parenting children with special needs. Here, friends, is my conversation with Laura Wiffler. Well, Laura, thank you for joining me on By Faith.
Thank you for having me. This is a joy to be here.
Well, and I was trying to think, you might be my first return guest.
Ooh, I feel excited about that.
Yeah, but last time your sister-in-law Emily was with you, so now I get you all by yourself, and I'm really excited to get to talk to you today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. And it's always, I love recording with Emily, but it's always kind of a special treat, too, to like own the mic, you know?
Yeah. For people who don't know you, I would love for you to introduce yourself.
Sure. Yes. My name is Laura Wiffler, and I am a mom to three kiddos. We live in central Iowa, my husband and I, and he is an engineer. I am the executive director of Risen Motherhood, which is a nonprofit ministry bringing gospel hope to moms. And I'm also the co-host of the podcast, which is super fun. So that's why it's really enjoyable to get to be on the other side here and chat with you. But yeah, that's kind of the main things that fill up my days, I guess.
The main things are a lot of things.
A lot of things.
What does it mean that you're the executive director?
You know, sometimes I wonder that too. No, okay. Just kidding. you know, we are a team of seven now. And wow. So there is quite a team and a lot of stuff happening at RM. You know, we produce podcasts. That's how we started. But we also produce articles and other content for moms, resources and questionnaires that they can think through, and social media content and all sorts of stuff. And so I guess it kind of, you know, I'm working on strategy and vision and looking ahead to say, hey, where are we going to be in 2 or 3 or 5 years? And of course, I've got the leadership team at Risen Motherhood. So it's not just me. And then there's also a great board of directors that we have in place that we're always working with to kind of keep the engine running and seeing where we should be going next.
Where are y'all going next?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, you know, we are changing a lot of things come this fall. Yes. I'm not sure when this episode will come out, but more than likely it'll be after our first season returns on August 26th. And we'll be talking a little bit about it, but come 2021, we do plan to change the format of the podcast. It'll still be Emily and myself talking on the show and everything like that. We're not bringing in different hosts, but our hope is to dive a lot deeper into some topics that we have a lot of interest in. People who are familiar with the show would know that they're normally a 20-minute show on a specific topic, everything from makeup to postpartum depression, you know, light and heavy topics. We cover it all, but we're really tight in what we talk about and how short. And our hope is to be able to dive a little bit deeper into topics, producing some more video content, and to keep producing other, I would say, just like printable resources, because we like our resources to be free for any mom in the world to access, but some printable resources that they can tangibly take. And the Risen Motherhood book comes out in Spanish in the fall. Ooh. So that's exciting too. Yes.
I was wondering if y'all are writing any more books together or separate?
I have a children's book, actually. You are the first person I've told. Yeah.
The world exclusive.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's big, a big secret. I'm writing a book in the Tales That Tell the Truth series. So I'm really excited to be a part of that. I feel like it's a beloved series in our home. And so I have one coming out on prayer, I believe next August or September. COVID's kind of making me wonder when it'll exactly come out, but sometime next late summer. So
that's so exciting.
Yeah. We're not currently working on a co-project, Emily and myself. I think because we'll both be changing our schooling systems and we've been home with our kids a lot more, we had some discussions about a book, but it's tabled for now.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you that we will write together again. We want to write together. We have lots of ideas. It's more just time, you know?
Yes. Well, I love where you're going with things. And for anybody out there, I mean, I'm sure most people have listened to you, know about you guys, but if you happen to not know, you definitely, as a mom, if you're a mom, go over to Risen Motherhood, their podcast, their articles they put out. They put out a newsletter where you get lots of great, they connect with a lot of other resources. So there's so much going on. The book too is really, it will encourage you in your parenting. So if you don't know about them, you need to head on over. And I wanted to invite you on, Laura, because I wanted to talk specifically about mothering a child with special needs.
Yeah.
And you have a daughter with special needs. And I think this is such an important topic that we really need to know. How can we step into the shoes of a friend or a family member, someone in our church who has a child with special needs? And so I thought you'd be the perfect person to speak to that. So we haven't talked about your family. So why don't you introduce your family and then let's just dive right in and learn more about your daughter specifically.
Perfect. Yeah. So my family, like I mentioned, I have three kiddos. My oldest is 7 and my middle daughter, she is 5. And then Eden, my youngest, is 3. And so she's the one with special needs. And Eden is a joy. I mean, if I just think about explaining her, I'm like, she is all that is light and good and fun in the world. You know, it doesn't mean things are easy, but it certainly, I enjoy her so much. And so specifically, her diagnosis is actually really unique. She's the only one in the world who has what she has. I know it's kind of weird, but then as you dive into it, you'll realize that there are lots of people that are really unique. There's a whole community of people that an organization that's called Unique out of the UK runs to help find and connect all these families that have children who basically, like, Eden's diagnosis is 5 pages of numbers. That's what we received.
What does that mean? I don't get it.
Well, it doesn't mean a lot. I think pretty quickly I started to become pretty good at genetics, I will say. I feel like I became a geneticist after we went through everything with Eden. But essentially, it's all of the genes that she has that are extra and they shouldn't be there. And so she just has some extra genes in her chromosomes, and every child with these types of manipulations or additions or deletions, it can be all sorts of things, they actually exhibit very differently for the child and what type of delays they end up having. And so when she was diagnosed, the doctors, you know, there's like a team of 5 people, and we gathered in this little room, and there's counselors and specialists and all sorts of people. They were explaining to us that essentially there are other children in the world and other adults in the world that have things that are similar to my daughter. But even if one gene is altered, that gene could mean the difference between whether or not someone will walk or talk. Yeah, so genetics are complicated. God made us beautifully and intricately and complicated. I mean, what she has wouldn't have even been able to be discovered 10 years ago. So I'm so thankful that we live in 2020 and even have sophisticated enough research and things like that to be able to discover what she has. But it didn't mean a lot, as you noted, like, what does it mean? For us, it's been just an unfolding and a discovery of what her life will be like. They told us, you know, they said, we're not sure if she'll ever walk or talk. We're not sure what her capabilities are, all those kind of things. Those are things that we don't know. And we're just going to kind of, we're going to learn. So,
wow. How old was she when she was diagnosed?
Just 2 months old.
So from birth, were there signs that something...
Yeah. So I was 36 weeks pregnant. Everything was going along perfectly fine, perfectly normal. This was my third pregnancy. And I went in for a daily checkup and I'm actually measured at 26 weeks. So anyone who's familiar with how that all works, you should measure on track or near. You shouldn't usually shrink by 10 weeks. And so I had actually lost a lot of fluid. And in order to not become TMI, basically it was pretty crazy for about a week where we were a lot of appointments, a lot of discussions with doctors about what to do. And I ended up being induced at 37 weeks. Eden was 4 pounds, 10 ounces. So pretty small for that gestational age. But she checked out fine. Actually, they sent us home as soon as she could fit in the car seat and they let us go. But I would just say it was up to my mama gut, my intuition. Mm-hmm. I said, this is my third baby and this does not feel right. And there wasn't necessarily a lot of things. I mean, there were things like, I felt like the eye contact was different. I felt like the smiling didn't come on time. You know, just things that, especially having gone through it before, you start to notice. And I really pushed for genetic testing, even when they didn't want to give it to us, because there wasn't enough of a history and you had to prove things to insurance. You know, you have to kind of make the case for why you need to get all this testing. And gosh darn it, I was going to do it. And yeah. I got her in around 2 months. So I'm super thankful because we were able to get ahead on a lot of things. And we did a lot of preventative care checks once it was discovered what she had. And we found a lot of things that through medication or surgeries or other assistance, we were able to just, delay or help assist with different medical needs that she was going to have. So it was just the Lord. He just worked in my heart and made me a mama bear, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to make this about me, but you and I, we've talked about this before, but yes. I have a child with special needs. And I always say that to moms, if there is something in you like that, that is the spirit nudging you that something is not quite right. Listen to that. That because you know more than anyone else that something's not right. And I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm going to attack this. I'm going to figure it out. So I think God made me specifically to, you know, parent the child that he gave me. But
absolutely.
I would love for you to take my listeners to that moment when you hear the doctor say, she has this genetic abnormality and we don't know what this means for her. What does that do to you as a mom? What are some of the thoughts, the feelings, maybe the first few days after? How are you processing that information?
Yeah, it's heavy. In the moment, I think there's some denial, some kind of out of body, is this happening to me feeling. And I think for every parent, I do want to say it's different how diagnosis comes. For us, it was a very speedy move from, hey, she's 2 months old, and suddenly we thought she was healthy, and now we're getting a diagnosis. And so it kind of just landed like a ton of bricks on us, a little bit of unbelief, and this won't be as bad as we think it's going to be. But I remember going home that night after the appointment, and it was normal. We put our big kids to bed. I nursed her and put her to bed. My husband clicked on the TV. And I remember washing dishes and it kind of, you know, it kind of comes back. And I just started saying, I can't do this, God. I cannot do this. I don't want to do this. Why are you doing this? So all of the questions just started coming out because we had been with, or talking with family and friends that day. And, you know, a lot of just, we got to take care of these things. And then it was just this quiet moment. And I felt like, Lord, what have you done? And I can't do this. I can't do it. And so I just remember wishing that, like, looking back at times, I thought, I really wish that I could say, like, man, God really revealed himself to me in that moment, or like God really showed up. But things went on really as normal. In fact, my husband had broken his leg and had a massive surgery a couple of days before she got diagnosed. He went to the hospital in a wheelchair, couldn't stand up or else he would faint because he was that recent from surgery. Mm-hmm. And it was a really hard season to walk through that and to also not have my husband really available to help. I definitely think I read my Bible more. I prayed more. But I don't necessarily think that like, oh, I felt this deep comfort right away. And I want to be honest about that and candid about that. Over time, looking back, I 100% see God working in all that suffering and all that difficulty. And I would say it's one of the single most things that has sanctified me and prepared me for eternity. But in the moment, it was just a lot of daily grind and trusting that Christ in me would work and help me to be faithful with the tasks at hand to care for my family. But my church family came around me really wonderfully. My biological family came around me. And so I'm so thankful that I had great relationships and people to support me. But it really is a deep, deep grief. And yes, one that it's hard to even explain or put somebody there in the way that it feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it kind of sets grief in motion.
Yes.
It's both a grief and a relief because you have a diagnosis. You have something specific.
Yes.
Because before you're like, something's not right. I don't know what it is. So I don't know what to do. Well, now there's a relief that you have this name for it. Well, for you, I don't know. Maybe there's not.
We do. I mean, at a level.
But there's also, it sets in motion this grief process.
Right.
And so you're kind of, it's a whirlwind, right? Of emotion.
Yes.
and all of that mixed together. And I like that. I appreciate that you're saying it wasn't this God moment where he just spoke to you, because it's this long process that continues.
Yeah.
It doesn't, yes, that's the thing, is it doesn't stop, right?
Yes.
You're still experiencing it today. And so
yeah,
let's talk about that. So As a mother of this daughter now, and you said she's five?
She's three.
Oh, three. I'm sorry. What are some of the things that you wish now, a couple of years into it, that other people could step into your shoes and understand about what it's like to be the mom of this very special daughter, Eden? Mm-hmm. What is that like for you that you would want us to understand? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think continuing with what we're talking about here is how grief works. It's been interesting to process through, because over the past few years, you know, I've also dealt with other grief and suffering, the death of loved ones very close to us, sicknesses, different diseases in my family. And I still feel like at some level, special needs, or like my walk with Eden, feels like different than other griefs. And I know everyone's grief is unique, and it's not about comparing which is harder or anything like that. That's not what I'm trying to do. But what is interesting with the grief of a child with special needs is that there is a day that I think most parents will come to and realize, I'm going to be grieving for the rest of my life. And I'm going to be grieving kind of heavily at certain moments, because with death, there's a permanence. With a sickness, you know, perhaps that person gets better, or again, that might be another one that is a grief that's progressive. So I think that's where special needs is, like standing right in front of you. And some days you don't think about it at all, and you're just enjoying God's good gift to you. And other days, randomly, it could be nothing somebody did or said, and it could be something someone said or did, but it could just be like the day, I don't know, that you feel really sad and you need to probably have a really good cry about it, and life will go on. But I think that there's an element of people being understanding that grief is going to pop up at random moments for a parent, and that they need to be able to have that space to be really sad. And that's kind of the Christian life, right? We're always grieving and always rejoicing, always sorrowful, always rejoicing. And so I think that has become a lot more bright to me to understand what that really means. And just like grief, we're also always processing it. You know, there's always something new. And as I explained, I feel like Eden is unfolding before us, where we're like, what's she going to be like? And that's a feeling I feel for my regularly developing children too. But I also have a pretty good gut instinct that if they'd like to go to college, that option might be available for them. If they'd like to get married, that option at least might be available to them. And so there sometimes is this different feeling because you think, well, I don't know, they might want that, and that option might not be there. And you're processing all of the things, and you might need to talk about it verbally. You might need space to just not talk about it at all. And so I think that that's something that is unique to the journey. And I'll never forget Abigail Dodds. She said to me once about her journey with her son's disability. She said, I needed to look fear right in the face and take out its fangs. And that's something that I think as parents with children with special needs, we have to do over and over and over again. We are actually facing those fears all the time. And there's new ones that are popping up. And so I think about, you know, you have to think for a parent, it could be that their child's going into surgery and their deepest fear is that they are going to die. Or maybe they are afraid that their nonverbal child is going to be sexually abused at school and won't be able to tell them. Or maybe they're afraid that, you know, just the world is going to judge them. And that's one of their deepest fears, is the rejection that their child will face, and that there's no one going to be there to protect them or pick up the pieces. And whatever it is, I think we have to remember that we have that comfort from the cross, right? That Christ looked fear in the face too, and he knows what it's like. He slayed it. He destroyed the death of sin in the fall with all these horrible things by dying to himself, hopefully you can edit that, by dying himself and rising again as a conquering hero to bring us life. And that is the hope that we all need, no matter what suffering we're facing. But if you have a friend that has a child with special needs, remind them of this. Give them space for a moment. Sometimes I think to be afraid, acknowledge those fears, help them think through, okay, well, if that happens, then what? Or how can we prevent that? Or what can we do to help you in that? And take them very seriously with those fears. But then help them take out the fangs of fear by reminding them of the true hope that they have in Jesus.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really helpful. So I'd love for you to talk about the uncertainty of the future. Yeah. And what you've learned about how to take the fangs out of fear, specifically regarding uncertainty, because you definitely are, that's something that you can speak to, not knowing what's going to happen with Eden. So how do you face that each day when I know exactly what you're talking about, because it's like there might be some specific thing that happens and you think, well, is she going to be able to do that? What is she going to be able to, you know, write her name or have a conversation or whatever it is? And so how do you deal with that uncertainty?
Yeah. I mean, I preach the gospel to myself a lot about these kind of things, and it's different with different types of fears, I think. But one thing that I think special needs has taught me more than anything is just where to put what eggs to put in what baskets. You know, we know that what's going to last is God, his word, and his people. And that's what to invest. That's what we should invest in. That's what we should care about. That's where we should spend our time. And I think for me, recognizing what is the purpose or the value of my life, what is the purpose or value of Eden's life? Is it that she get married? Is it that she go to college? Is it that she writes her name? No, that's not where her value comes from. And I think that is the most hopeful thing as a believer that is so different and contrary to what anyone in the world is able to offer, is that our inherent value is found in being an image bearer of Christ. And any child with special needs is that. They're made imago Dei. And so I think when I step back and I recognize, okay, like her value and her worth and my value and my worth does not come from how good of a parent I am in intervening or in advocating for her or what she will accomplish, but that before the Lord that we are so incredibly valued and loved, then I think that takes away a lot of my fears of like, what will she accomplish? Or will she have a good life? You know, some of those things. And then you have kind of the fear of sin and the fall and of the very real reality that very difficult things may happen and may be faced. And I think there, I just have to trust that God is sovereign and he is good and he's good at being God. And he has my best in mind and he loves my little girl more than I ever could, which is hard to fathom, but I know he does. And that he will allow what he will allow, and I can be wise in it, but I'm going to fear God more than I fear these uncertainties in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, can you talk about how other people, friends, how they can relate specifically to Eden, not just to you, but to her in a way that ministers to you and is a blessing to you?
Yeah. Well, I absolutely love it when people enjoy her, when they get to know her, when they spend time with her, when even just going up and just kind of trying to talk to her and, you know, it's going to go kind of weird and like, they're probably not going to know what to say. I know that. I am sympathetic towards any parent that kind of feels, or I'm sorry, towards any adult or individual who does try to interact with her, but I love it. And I am so, so thankful when they take interest in her and slow down to give her some of that attention. Another thing, like if you have a close friend with a child with special needs, learning how to do all the things, put on the braces, help with the G-tube, put them in their wheelchair. I mean, I don't know the gamut of things, but I have a few select friends that have said, I'm going to learn how to do this with you. I want to learn what her medication is. I want to learn how you put on her braces and what the system is. And I am so grateful for people that I can trust that can then care for her and help me and that I know she's going to get great care. And I also think I love it when people still invite her to her peer-aged things, even if developmentally she is a little bit behind, but to see her included with her peers just means everything to me. And for them to say, how can we help make this successful for you? How can we make sure that Eden can attend? What can we do to make you comfortable at whatever event it is? Those are the kind of things that go so far. And often I'll say, nothing, you know, I'll just make it happen. But it meant everything to me that they were willing and they were thinking and they were saying, we want you to come. I see you. I care about you. We love Eden. She's not an inconvenience to us. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things really, really matter. And we remember and see those things.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. What about hidden vulnerabilities that you have as a mom? And you kind of mentioned this when you talk about grief that's always kind of there and things will happen that this grief will rise up again. Can you help other women understand who don't know what it's like to parent a special needs child? What are those hidden vulnerabilities that you have?
Yeah. I think this one again is a spectrum of things because disabilities, you know, can be invisible and you might not even notice them until you spend enough time with an individual. And sometimes they can be just physical. Sometimes they can be just cognitive. And so I want to just preface it by saying, hey, these are maybe some of mine, but that it's best always to talk with your friend. And like most of us are really open and desire to share those things. Yes. If you just kind of crack the door, we'll push it open, you know?
Yes.
So I think for me and something that I know I've shared with a few of my friends who also have children with special needs that they felt is that there is, I'm not entirely sure how to always phrase it, but a heightened concern that we don't become a burden to those around us. Because sometimes it feels like we bring a bit of a heavier load with us than perhaps, you know, entirely able-bodied families. And it can be hard for us to ask for or accept help. And when we're with others, I really especially struggle with the concept of loving my neighbor and feeling like, well, which neighbor do I need to love? And what I mean by that is, obviously, many children with special needs, they have loud outbursts, they have tantrums, they can get physical, they might need extra assistance to sit down or stand up, they might have really large adaptive equipment or drool, be messy eaters, need a G-tube, all sorts of things. And so it's not entirely simple for us to be out and about. And I know that sometimes I can feel like I'm an inconvenience for others. And we really want our children to be accepted, to be enjoyed. We want our families to be welcome and invited. And so I think it can mean that sometimes we feel like we're working double time to like be one step ahead of the kid and make sure that we're really, you know, doing everything ourselves so no one has any problems. And there's this feeling of, are we still welcome here? Are we just too much for them? Are we still accepted? Is everyone okay? Or are they embarrassed to be associated with me right now? Are we just kind of dragging this event down? And for example, over the weekend, we went on a small lake vacation with some extended family. And there were multiple times where I had to excuse myself and my daughter because she was, you know, likely overstimulated, but just being really loud, really fussy, just not able to be calmed down. And so I had to leave early from things. And that's really hard. And that's a hard call to make, because just like any regularly developing kid, you kind of think, well, if I give them enough food, will they calm down? Or if I, you know, kind of distract them or give them a break, will they calm down? And we're wondering the same things. We're thinking, what are all my strategies? How can I stay and enjoy? But also like make sure that my child is not disturbing the peace of others and that people like my child. And so I think that the best thing to do here, you know, with friends is to either smile and kind of affirm, like encouraging, and let people just kind of know, hey, I'm for you, I'm on your team. Or perhaps even if others, you know, look away and you busy yourself with other things so we don't feel like we're this spectacle and being stared at. I think that those are kind of some quick tips of things to do. But also more than anything, if you can, to affirm that parent later. You know, after a very particularly difficult tantrum that one of my my daughter had, my father-in-law, after she had gone to bed, just came up to me and he gave me a hug. And he said, I don't know how you guys do it. You have so much patience. You're doing a really good job. Mm-hmm. And that meant the world to me. Mm-hmm. Because I know we all have that need to feel accepted, to feel known. And as believers in Christ, we know logically that we are, but sometimes it feels really good to hear it from another image bearer. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, speaking to all of the friends out there, if you can, if it's true, tell us we're doing a good job. Tell us that, oh, you wouldn't know what to do either. You know, tell us that you're proud of us and remind us in those quiet moments that, hey, you're doing really good work for the glory of God. And I can see his faithfulness in you. And that, like Jesus, you know, he said of the blind man in John, we are displaying the works of God for all to see. Those are the things that just carry us through, I think, some of those really hard moments. And if you can say those things to your friend and mean those things, I think that they'll pocket them and treasure them forever.
Yes, that's absolutely true. What is something that you wish that people would ask you more about what it's like to parent Eden? And then, of course, I want you to answer that question.
You know, this was a little hard for me because I feel like perhaps I'm in a good community where I have a lot of friends that ask a lot of great questions. But
I do,
I'm super thankful we're in a phenomenal community, but I do think that it's helpful when someone asks, hey, how are you doing lately processing special needs? Because like grief kind of is this continual theme in our conversation. If someone asks me like, hey, how are you feeling about special needs? I'm kind of like, well, I don't know, all over the place, you know, 1 second one and 1 second another thing. But when they kind of ask a specific moment, how are you doing today? Or how are you feeling about her going off to school? Or kind of being specific, I do really appreciate the recognition that like, this is a little different than my regularly developing kiddos and what they're doing. And I'm really grateful just for their tenderness towards knowing that that's different. And then I would also say, I love it when people ask me, which they don't ask this very often, which is totally fine. But what's Eden working on in therapy lately? You know, what are some things that I can do to kind of help her with her therapy? And that is so generous for someone to ask, because a lot of therapy, depending on, I guess, what types it is, but a lot of therapy can be done on the playground and it can be done, you know, after church, just kind of messing around and maybe we're working on running, you know? And so can you play tag? That would be awesome. And that is actually really helping her to develop and grow. And so I think that I love when people take time to recognize that a significant portion of my life is spent at therapy. And this is a big thing in your life. And I want to be a part of it. You know, that means a lot.
And I love that because it's true. You spend so much time in meetings and
yes,
for therapies and they're doing this and that. And it's really something you don't talk about unless someone
right,
asks. I think we keep mentioning the grief thing, and I want to make sure that people understand what that means and why it would be continual. And this goes along with what you just said, that I think a lot of times when milestones come up is when grief comes up too. So if your child is starting kindergarten and all of their peers are starting kindergarten at the same time, their experience is going to be different. And that can, because you see what typical kids are experiencing, there can be grief that your child is not going to experience it the same way. It may be more difficult for them. Generally, everything is more difficult for them. So I think that's what we mean, right? Is that what,
yes.
what you experience with yes. grief? It typically comes at those milestone moments. It can yes. not always.
Right.
But yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, milestone. And when someone checks in, it does mean a lot, you know? Yeah. Their birthday, a lot of times day of diagnosis. And I don't expect people to remember, but even just being sensitive when maybe I do want to excuse myself from something. Sorry, could you hear that?
Yeah.
My phone.
You oh, could no, hear my I didn't phone ring? No. I didn't okay. hear that.
It came on my headphones and I thought, said. I apologize. No, my phone just came really loud and I thought I had it on silent. I apologize. Now I lost my train of thought, but milestone moments.
Grief coming up.
Yeah.
People being sensitive to days.
Oh yeah. And I don't expect them to be, but there have been times where I've just excused myself from an event because it's just been kind of hard. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated when either someone asks, hey, are you okay? Or they haven't pressured me to re-enter, but giving that space for grief, I think no matter what suffering someone is dealing with, you know, think of Job's friends, you know, they were great whenever they sat silently with him, you know, but like that part is a good model. There are yeah. other not so good models,
right.
but they were with him. And that is so touching to me whenever I have a friend who's willing to just be with me or to ask a few questions, but to just listen and to be sensitive to those moments for sure.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You remind me of me in some ways. Some of the things you say, of like when you were talking about being that tiger mama or whatever,
yeah.
however you just mama bear, that is me. And whenever when we received this diagnosis, I was like, I am going to attack this thing.
Yeah.
I am, you know, I'm going to put everything I can behind this. And I realized after a while, oh wait, no, like I can't change this. I'm not in control here. So I'm wondering how your faith plays into that, where you're going to do everything you can do for your daughter, but at the same time, you can't change this.
Yeah. Yeah. This is huge. I think, oftentimes, especially when like we're prioritizing her needs, or we're thinking through what do we want to kind of attack, or what do we kind of want to spend extra time on? I have to remind myself that I do not worship the altar of any therapy, any medication, any process. I worship at the throne of God. And so how does that order what I spend my time on, and how does that inform my decisions? And oftentimes it means we're looking at kind of our family holistically, and we're saying, well, everybody here needs to have time to be able to do the things that they do. And sometimes it means that we don't do all the things. And as much as I would love to just mama bear it out, like I need to kind of spread out the love. And I think that that has helped order priorities, certainly whenever I'm dealing with uncertainties. And something else I think that has been really huge for me is, and how my faith has informed special needs, is this knowledge that as believers, that I do not have to do it all here. I do not have to experience everything. I do not have to perfectly find all the solutions and all of the answers, but that really we live twice. And someday in eternity, there's going to be amazing things for me to accomplish and do. And, you know, I'm going to be totally all up in arms worshiping Jesus. I know that, but like there will be work for us to do. There'll be dreams, there'll be purpose, there will be all these wonderful things. And so sometimes I think whenever I get caught up in wanting to accomplish things and do things here on earth, and I feel sad or self-pity because I'm not able to do the things that I want to do, I can remind myself that, no, actually, someday I'm going to do everything I wanted to do and more in heaven. And so now I can sacrifice everything for the sake of others and drawing them to the glory of God. And something that my husband and I teach our children is a phrase called my life for yours. And what that really means is, hey, Christ gave his life for you. He laid down his life for you, and now you can lay it down for others. And trust me, I repeat that phrase all the time, like every morning during dinner, my life for yours, I'll go get you another drink. No problem. So, But it really changes your mindset of this idea that I do not have to do it all here. I don't have to accomplish all here because I know that we're going to be doing even better things in heaven. And my purpose, like I can do that and I can fulfill it if I have a child with special needs or not. And Eden can fulfill that whether or not she has special needs. Again, going back to being made in Imago Dei, like we know that God gives us purpose and he is the one who determines our value. And so I think that alleviates a lot of the rat race or this feeling that like I have to do all the things. Instead, I can rest and know that I need to be faithful with what God's put in front of me. I can order my days according to his priorities. And then I can walk in freedom and know that like I got eternity waiting for me. And so, hey, who needs to be served?
Mm-hmm. One thing I've learned from parenting a child with special needs is that I can learn, I've learned so much, probably the most about God through my child.
Me too.
And so I would love for you to talk about Eden specifically and what you have learned about God through her.
Oh man. Well, I don't even know where to begin because as you said, it's kind of one of those, this has been the number one teacher, I think, to sanctify me and grow me in holiness. But I think that one of the most acute things that stands out to me is the unchangingness of God. And especially when I was going through diagnosis, I had to remind myself that, hey, I serve the God of the Bible. I serve the God that took 5 loaves and 2 fish and he fed thousands. He raised a dead man simply by the sound of his voice. He is a God that opens barren wounds. He parts seas. He heals the blind. And he even protects tiny little sparrows. And he was enough for his people then, and he is enough for his people now. And my God was the same before diagnosis mm-hmm. as he is after diagnosis. He was good to me then. He is good to me now. He was trustworthy then. He is trustworthy now. And that is true of any suffering and trial that we go through. But so often I find myself saying, Lord, I will walk with you in the sun, but I do not want to trudge with you in the rain. And then I realize, no, that I'm holding a double standard. I'm not accepting God for who he is. He has not changed. I have. And I think that this has taught me his steadiness and unchangingness, and that I can always trust him. I can always obey him because he always has my good at hand. And so I think for me, it has just really deepened my faith in who he is. And I went through a season of doubt. I've talked about it a little bit on social media. I went through a season of real doubt of just not really being so sure of God. And it took a long time. I mean, I would say like 2 years. And at times, like that's still kind of a special side that I get to live with, something new to my faith. But the questions that I had to ask were like, if he never changes, why am I changing? And how can I rest in knowing that he is always the same and trust that he is always for my good? And how can I do the things that I need to do to trust him and obey him so that even when I don't feel it and I don't feel all the good, warm, fuzzy feelings of faith, I can continue to follow him even in the dark. Mm-hmm. And that has really tested my faith a lot. But it has been so good for me. It's given me new sympathy for other people. It's given me, I think, a deeper and firmer faith, even though at one level I'm like, well, having doubts, like that doesn't feel very firm. But I think it reminds me, no, like I know why I believe what I believe. And that has been really transformative for me to have, I think, a time of wrestling with God mm-hmm. and to say that like, I have a limp now, but I trust him and like, I'm with him and I'm following him all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm. It's that it's the suffering and it's the limp that,
yeah,
that shows you in yeah. the end.
Yeah.
Okay. He has the words of life. Where else can yeah. I go?
Yes.
Thanks for sharing that with us. I hope you'll talk more about that. I know you have some, but that I think a lot of people experience that. And I think we need more people talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. And I do want to close just talking about Eden. And if you don't follow Laura on Instagram, you got to go and follow her because you get to see pictures of Eden. And at the very beginning, you described her as just a joy and sunshine. And she comes across like that in the pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a very, seems very happy little girl.
Yes. She's very active. She's busy. She's social. And it, you know, what's so fun is like, I didn't know if she would walk. Uh-huh. And now she, I chased her around the house. And I remember saying something to somebody on Voxer just the other day, a friend of mine. And I was like, you know, I think it'll be good for Eden to go to preschool. Like, she's really busy and she just kind of always running off somewhere. I said the word run. And my friend was like, do you remember when you didn't know if she would run? And I was like, I do. And thank you for reminding me, like, what a gift, you know, to just every little milestone is such a gift from God. Uh-huh. And Eden really, she is hilarious and funny. She's starting to talk. She has kind of one or two words. So that's really exciting. She definitely wants to communicate all the things to you. And she loves cars, which is super fun. Like the big cars that you drive, you know, the electric cars for kids.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So she loves those and she can't steer. So she just runs into our house all the time. Awesome. I have to unplug it and be like, it's broken, baby. I'm sorry, you know, and she's pretty cool with that, but it's like her favorite thing in the world is to drive one of those cars. So we take her out into a field and kind of let her race around. But yeah, I could talk about her forever. She is so fun.
So she's making some progress. That's so great.
She is. She's, I'm trying to even think, like, she can work a zipper now. She can kind of start to snap buttons. We're working on spitting out the water from the toothpaste. So lots of, those are like the little things that you think should be automatic, you know, but it's also so fun to see them come together as a child learns to do those kind of things where I've never before realized, I remember a therapist once said to me, there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of things a child has to do before they can learn to talk or before they can walk. Like the body has to integrate and do so many things that she said, and she wasn't a believer, but she said, it is an absolute miracle that any of us walk or talk at all. Uh-huh. And I was like, that is right. And so seeing it like slow down, it's like we're watching it in slow motion with her, has been so fun at some level, like just to get to say, oh, and now we're working on, you know, hooking these things to, I don't know, like, pulling tension, your arms in separate directions. And like, that's a skill that sometimes you have to be taught that and who knew? So it makes me really grateful for the able body that God gave me. And it also makes me super grateful to just say, thank you for therapists. Thank you for wise, smart people who have figured out everything that needs to happen. And they're willing to be patient and kind and to teach our family this. Like, there are so many good graces that God has given us that when we're in the world of special needs, I think, man, I am so grateful for living in 2020 and God's just lavish kindness to us of all the things that we get to enjoy that perhaps some people haven't gotten or don't remember to thank God for.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to close with just one question because I remember that day when I got a diagnosis and I was just, I mean, it just felt like my world got rocked. Yeah. And I started looking for resources. I started looking for, how do I think about this? I would love for you to speak to any moms out there who maybe they just got a diagnosis for their child or they're, you know, a year or two in and they're just like, how do I think about this? How do I navigate this? What words of truth or hope would you offer them?
I would remind them that God has them, that he sees, that he knows, that he knit their child together perfectly in their womb, and that God controls the wind and the waves. He has all power, all sovereignty over everything, and that nothing happens as an accident. And I don't know why God chooses to allow special needs, and I'm not going to even attempt to tackle that. But I do know that we can trust that God is good and that God is good at being God. And I know that God, I promise them that God will show up for them. And that even on the really, really dark days, when you're mad and you're angry, you can tell him and that he can handle those things. And I would say, don't hide from that. Run to God with your questions. Run to him with your pain and your fears. And then continue to do so over and over again. Trust the things that you learned in the light will be the same in the dark. And I think for me, when I went through a season of doubt and desiring at some level to say, well, I want to withdraw because I don't feel him, or I don't know where he is, or I don't know how this can be true. I think those are really normal questions. Those are natural. And I want you to hear that, like, I run a ministry and I asked those questions. And so it's okay to ask those things. God can handle them and there are answers for them. And I think as you progress through, remember to do the things you need to do to stay close to God. So don't stop reading your Bible. Don't stop praying. Don't stop listening to worship music. There will be days when that will feel kind of trite and it will feel kind of pointless. But as you can, pick back up your Bible, keep reading, keep trusting him, and keep asking him for him to show himself to you. And I promise you that he will. It might take years, but it is worth it. He is so worth it that I just can't express to you enough how much I've grown and changed through having a child with special needs, and the amazing ways that I've seen God work, and how as I've kind of come through some of the storm, just the deep, deep love that I have for him, for my Savior, and the way that I cherish him more than ever before. And if this is going to draw me closer to Christ, that I am willing to do that. I want to do whatever it takes to know Christ more. That's what I want. And for some reason, God uses suffering and pain and sorrow and hard things that draw us to him. And so say, okay, God, whatever you have for me, okay. Like, I will trust you because I know that I'm going to fall more in love with you in it, and I'm going to grow more into the image of your son.
Friends, as we continue our season walking in the shoes of our brothers and sisters and the experiences that God has given them, you can help me by getting the word out about By Faith. Share about the podcast with your friends and on social media, and be sure to tag me when you do. I'd love to see what you're loving about each episode. And please, if you can, leave a review on iTunes. All of these things help on my end as I seek to serve the church and help us all love one another well. Thank you so much. Join me next week as I talk with Barnabas Piper. Barnabas shares about his divorce, helping his two daughters navigate his divorce, and most of all, navigating church as a divorced man. He helps us step into his shoes and into the shoes of our divorced brothers and sisters in the church to understand how we can love and serve them well. I think this is a needed conversation, and I can't wait to share it with you. Until then, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.